Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for March 17th, 2024, the fifth Sunday in Lent in year B. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Fisher's blah, 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 Holy Family
Slow Episcopal down. Church down
in ship. Fishers, Indiana. We're going to walk it back. Here we go. The fifth Sunday in Lent. We were literally just before I hit record commenting on where has Lent gone.
I haven't even addressed my Good Friday cards yet.
Yeah, this is so we've got, what do we have, 2 more weeks?
The week after fifth Sunday in Lent is Palm Sunday. Yeah,
wow. Okay, and now remind me, is Lent and Easter one of those that like kind of like shares their beginning and end? Like, is that, you know how, you know what I mean? Like, some, there's like a service that like it straddles the line of the two, or
Good Friday kind of, no, not Good Friday. Palm Sunday kind of does that.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, Lent ends with the beginning of Holy Week, but there is some penitential stuff around Palm Sunday, so it still feels Lenty.
Yeah. Lenty. Yeah. A little lentil.
Vegetarians out there, shout out.
Hey, lentils, gotta love them. Yummy. Really good.
Good for you.
Lent is the topic of the day. If you are feeling as though your Lenten devotion is like just, you know, the hardest thing in the world, you're almost done, man. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Stretch.
You got this. You've got this. If you are like, I'm really going to do a Lenten devotion this year.
Yeah.
maybe next year, bud.
just focus on Holy Week.
Yeah. Just start preparing. Like, it was a good try. Yeah. Maybe next year.
I guess we should say, go to church.
Yeah. Get thee to a nunnery. No.
Which in Shakespeare, House of Ill Repute.
Mm.
When it
okay, get line. Thee not to a nunnery. Right. Get thee to the friar. interesting.
Old English was wonderful.
Yes.
Double meanings.
So what all do we have going on? I mean, obviously we could spend the whole time talking about like, Holy Week, but I'm going to save that for like next podcast.
Yeah.
What do we have going on at the church right now? I know that next Sunday we have the second half of like the parish survey, and that'll be more of the discussion,
brainstorming
what to do next. How to take the information and create action items around that. So that's a really good discussion. If you did not make part one, which was just the survey results, you can gain access to that information. Just email the admin@hfec.org, and we can get you a copy of those results if you want to participate in the second half.
Yep.
It's, you know, they're numbers. It's not
charts.
Yeah, they're charts and numbers. So it's not terribly difficult to catch up on on what the results were that were presented this past Sunday. But what else do we have going on?
Coming up on the 17th, we have the newcomers information session.
Ooh. Is that going to be a lunch?
It'll be refreshments.
So it's gotcha.
Basically a better coffee hour.
Mm. Gotcha.
So yeah, that's Sunday around 11:30-ish.
Okay.
And I'm trying to see I'm about to see it. The 22nd is Stations of the Cross.
Gotcha.
With hosted by the youth group.
Okay.
22nd
is a
Friday.
And so that'll be like an evening.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
You know, I'm not sure what time
6:13
at which it is.
Punctually at 7:21. No, I don't know. You know who does know? Our website knows. Go
knows
out to
all.
holyfamilyfishers.org, and the events tab will take you to all that information.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that we want to promote?
This past Sunday, the music and meditation presented by Joel,
mm-hmm.
One thing he recommended that I want to echo here is the movie Summer of Soul.
Okay.
The theme of the past Sunday's music and meditation was taking the traditions of church music into the wider community.
Mm, okay.
I think Joel said into the streets.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
And Summer of Soul is a great documentary. It's on Disney Plus. It's just amazing. It's one of those things that is on my list to watch, and I had not. And then Joel gave that teasing about what a great movie it is and played songs from the soundtrack for our meditation time. And so I haven't finished it, but I've started it, and it's amazing.
Good. Yeah. All right. So brought to you by our sponsor, Disney Plus.
Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Though you
yeah.
Could, though...
Though you can bundle it with Hulu and ESPN. Yeah.
I was going to say you could also just buy the records.
Oh, there you go. Money, please. Thank you, Daddy Disney.
I don't know who has the trademark and copyright on the music.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I hope that goes to the original artists.
I would hope so, too.
It starts with a Stevie Wonder drum solo.
Oh, cool.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, it's cool. Just, all right, well.
I've already watched that part twice, even though I haven't finished it.
All right, so say the name of the...
Summer of Soul. Soul.
Gotcha.
It was a music festival in the big park that's in Harlem, New York, okay. In the summer of 1969, over 4 weekends. And so this was able to cherry pick the best of the music and... put it into context of 1969, the civil rights movement, and interviewing the artists all these years later in contemporary interviews.
Yeah. So that's Summer of Soul, not Summer of Sam. That's a totally different, don't watch that one. different movie.
Yeah.
Probably not on Disney Plus. Okay, well, great. Well, with that, we'll move over to this day in church history. Let's find out if we were naughty or nice.
in preparation for Good Friday.
Just a quick scan here. Our first entry comes from 1479. Pope Sixtus, and one would think Pope Sixtus was number, like, he's got a number after his name, but he's Pope Sixtus IV, which is weird. Grants the rector and dean of the University of Cologne the authority to censor printers, sellers, and readers of quote-unquote heretical books.
Oh. Yeah, that was the baby steps of the Inquisition.
Yeah.
Spanish Inquisition that no one expected.
Right? Thank you, Mel Brooks.
Yep. Monty Python.
Or Monty Python.
It was an M.
Mel Brooks did one. Didn't he do a...
I don't know, but...
He did his thing from A History of the World.
I was referencing no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes.
Chief weapons are... ..
Yes, you are correct. That is Monty Python. Yeah, the two are so... so funny and related. The authority for that date does come from the book called A History of the Inquisition of Spain. So,
I was more right than
you. You were very right. 1483, we see the death of Macarius, the abbot and wonder worker of Calazan. I don't know where that is, where he founded a monastery. Let's see where this is from. Russia. Okay, so.
I was going to guess that, but it could be any Slavic country.
Yeah. Calazan is.
They're big into the title wonder worker.
Oh, okay.
The Orthodox churches.
So your context clues there.
Oh, yeah.
1498, local authorities, frightened by the Pope's threat to interdict the city of Florence, ask Girolamo, boy, I stumbled over that, Girolamo Savonarola.
I want pizza for lunch.
to stop preaching. They ask him to stop preaching. He will not. And soon afterward, is praised? No, he was executed.
And how?
It just says executed.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah, they left out the gory details. Yeah. 1649, the martyrdom in Ontario of Jesuit priest Gabriel Lamante, who prays for the souls of the Iroquois as they slowly torture him to death. This is how it says, indigenous torments.
Oh my goodness. That sounds just so offensive.
It does. It does.
I mean, especially since we spent weeks hearing what the white guys' tortures were. What could these people do that was anything worse?
No, it was bringing the word of, you know, Christ to the land is what we were doing.
We were never going to do anything mean.
We didn't do anything mean. I mean,
do you? Okay.
We did accidentally kill a crap ton of them with like the diseases that we brought, but that was not intentional.
On blankets that we gave.
That's true. But again, that actually was not intentional. Big whoopsie.
Some of it was.
Huh?
Some of it was.
Some of it was?
Yeah, that was one of the strategies.
Your blankets that we know is going to kill you?
Yeah.
I had it wrong. You're this shocked. Whole time. We're worse than I thought.
It gets worse. It was I believe it was the French. But anyway, it was white settlers who created the practice of scalping.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
And that was how people were paid for the killings they did.
I hate us.
Yeah.
All right.
And the indigenous folks said, you're scalping our dead people. We'll do it to you.
Huh. God, we're terrible. Yeah. 1840, death in Shropshire, England, of Lady Lucy Whitmore, author of Prayers and Hymns. The most famous of the latter is Father Again in Jesus' Name We Meet, which I think I have heard before, but I just wanted to say Shropshire.
You almost made me spit coffee when you said it.
Death in Shropshire, England, Lady Lucy Whitmore. Yep.
She choked on her penny pie.
But the name of this book that it comes from is a book called Lady Hymn Writers.
Oh.
So there you go. 1856, Amanda Smith, living in Pennsylvania, goes to a cellar and prays, saying she will be saved or die. She soon experiences the glory of the Lord, and they don't say how or what. I would love to know. There's so many questions. Like, there's a before that I want to know. Like,
why?
Why are you in a cellar praying you either get saved or die?
Yeah.
And then the experience of the glory of the Lord would be nice to know.
I'll go another step and the what difference did it make?
Yeah, the so what question.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. It is a it comes from an autobiography, the story of the Lord's dealings with, and then it does a ... Amanda Smith. So I don't know what the title is too long to. I don't know.
I'm picturing people like, she should have stayed in the cellar. Her sentences go on forever.
Let's see. Let's take a look at the cover of the book so I can tell you. The story of the Lord's dealing with Mrs. Amanda. Oh, that's why it's ... the story of the Lord's dealings with Mrs. Amanda Smith. And this actually would give you enough context. And so I am reading the title
here.
I'm reading the title. The Colored Evangelist.
Oh.
So now you know probably why she prayed in the cellar.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. So sometimes those contexts, the context does help. What happened, what the experience of the glory of God, how that was manifested. And
I'm not being whipped.
I mean, it wouldn't have taken much.
I'm hiding
geez.
In a cellar.
But there you go. There's Amanda Smith. So yeah, I understand why we did a ... there, but I think the context would have helped. Especially since it's the title of their autobiography.
I think the person putting together this list was trying to walk down the middle of a road you really shouldn't try to mark the middle of.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. 1902, death in New York City of George W. Warren, an outstanding organist who served at several large Episcopal churches in Albany, Brooklyn, and New York in the second half of the 19th century. One of his hymn tunes is still in use, that to which we sing, God of our fathers, whose almighty hand.
Yeah.
And by this comes from the Lutheran history. I don't think we use that hymn as much in the Episcopal Church, but
we used to.
Yeah. So, yeah. George W. Warren.
I actually recognize that name.
There you go. Last and not least, 1960, Bishop Kung Ping Mei of Shanghai is sentenced to life imprisonment because he refuses to head a communist church control movement. So the Communist Party approached him and said, hey, how about being our figurehead puppet? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, thank you. And life in prison.
Did it say what denomination he was in?
It does not. The authority for the date comes from the book Iron Curtain Christians.
Okay, so that's
very broad. Let me do a quick research, Catholic.
Okay.
I had but to search his name, and when you show up with a bright red hat and red robe to the waist, you know. That is a Catholic bishop right there.
That was one of the ongoing, and continues to be ongoing, is how much the Roman Catholic Church should bend to the Communist Party in order to keep their churches open and their clergy out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore being able to serve people, especially the sacraments. And it's not, you just do this kind of problem.
I don't know. There it is. He did spend 30 years in prison. He was released in 1986, but was kept under house arrest until 1988, and then passed away in 2000. So, long, long time to stand for that decision. But God bless him.
Yeah.
That's a hard choice to have to make.
So those of you who did not fulfill your Lenten practices, my goodness.
The shame.
Yeah.
The shame. But yeah, so that's this day in church history, March 17th. A mixture of glory to God and the terribleness of human beings.
Yes.
Which, boy, isn't that about every time we do this. Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to our first reading for the day, and that comes from Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31 through 34. So a nice short one. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant that I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, a covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, says the Lord. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. No longer shall they teach one another, or say to each other, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, says the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and remember their sin no more. To start at the top, I have a question,
mm-hmm.
Just so that we can parse out the terms here. I'm going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. What's the difference between the house of Israel and the house of Judah?
Israel, I believe, was to the north and Judah was to the south.
Okay.
It was two different territories.
Gotcha.
I mean, what often, especially Christians, just call Israel.
Right. Yeah, because it's not one of the it's not the tribes' names. This is, you know, so this is a region.
This is when, yeah, the politics had developed enough that there were two kingdoms.
Gotcha.
Sort of co-kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
And both had significant histories that were different from the other. And so by the time Jeremiah comes along, It's you gotta say both if you mean both.
Gotcha. So Jeremiah is after Isaiah, right? So this is after, or is this during?
About the same time.
About the same time. So the reunification of the people of Israel, did that play into, or was this division from before?
This division was from before being taken into captivity by the Babylonians,
okay,
before being enslaved. And so it's the people who were enslaved would have, you know, their context would have been, we have the territory of Israel, we have the territory of Judah that we were pulled out of.
Gotcha.
And so that's how Jeremiah has to address things. He can't just say, remember where we're all from? We're all going to be together, because people got, well, yeah.
You mean us, not them, right?
Yeah, right.
Was that kind of a division line where it was a little bit of us versus them kind of mentality?
Not by this point.
Okay.
In part because people kept conquering.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't in the early days, they were at times even in armed conflict with each other. But I'm forgetting whether it was David or his son Solomon united them, united the house of Judah, house of Israel, in part around temple worship in Jerusalem. So that part would have been Solomon. But there still were some teasing of each other, I guess is the term I'll use.
Gotcha. So kind of like a two brothers kind of a thing.
Who are still in partnership with the same business.
Gotcha. Okay. What about this term in verse 32 that would make a reader go, hey, wait, I'm sorry, what? Took them by the hand, led them out of Egypt, a covenant that they broke, though I was their husband. Mm-hmm. So is this a marital term in mm-hmm. the original Hebrew?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We don't usually think of God as spousal, mm-hmm. right? So
right.
That stands out as interesting. What context can you give to this?
Well, there are lots of places where God, through the mouths of prophets, presents God's self as either a bride or a groom.
Okay. Yeah. Usually that's so I guess that's true. That's usually in the context of the people as a whole, which I suppose
that's what this is about too.
Prior. Yeah. I was just thinking of, my brain went to like ancestors took them by the hand. Like I was thinking that of like those specific people and not really like my brain didn't still keep them clumped as
you know,
the houses. Of both Israel and Judah, it was more like those folks. Gotcha. I like that. I like the tone that comes across. I can imagine. I suppose it would be stereotypical, so I don't mean it to be insulting in that way, but it would be a very Jewish kind of I can imagine my Jewish friends, dads specifically, sounding like this and like, brought them out of the hand of Egypt. A covenant they broke, by the way. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, water under the bridge. But anyways, so this is another instance where covenants come up in the Old Testament quite a lot. Like it's covenant,
a biggie thing.
Yeah, this covenant leads to this covenant. Now it's not that covenant anymore. We're doing this covenant now, or this is a covenant in addition to a different covenant. This is a separate covenant, and this is one of those separate covenants. This is not. This is like there's the covenant of. After the story of Noah, that's a covenant.
Now I see what you're saying.
The circumcision became a another covenant structure.
But Abraham.
Right.
That's, with Abraham. Most people say Abraham ran, yeah, when circumcision.
Well, that's...
That's memorable.
That's, yes. It formed that
it
practice.
It was the expression.
Yes. As that a, so that covenant was ongoing as a result.
It continues.
And still continues to this day. So this is... But this is not a... These are not... This is not a new covenant replacing like that covenant. It's a renewal of, okay.
But the language is a, how should I put it? God saying, I do remember how you broke the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
That was no small thing. However, we are renewing it now.
Right.
Or will renew it soon.
And just so there's context, because a lot of times we use these biblical words and forget their exact meaning. Like we kind of understand the generality of it. So like you might be inclined to think like covenant, that's a promise, right? It's a promise. Like when God created the covenant after at the end of Noah's story, it was a promise that he won't destroy the world, right? The covenant is actually an agreement. It's a two-way.
Oh, it's deeper than that.
Yeah.
The only modern equivalent at least in the United States, is marriage.
Mm.
Where, yeah, there's some legal pieces, but it's a promise of relationship.
Right.
And breaking it has consequences. That's the blessings and curses we love to demonstrate. It's actually stronger than a legal contract, because a legal contract, you break it, okay, we'll have to renegotiate what the land border is, or
gotcha,
who gets what in the will. But a covenant is, you're breaking someone's heart.
Yeah.
The relationship is rent asunder. I'm referencing the wedding ceremony.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Let no man put asunder. So it's actually a more powerful word than contract.
Yeah.
Even though, again, Americans tend to think, oh, contract's an ironclad thing you can have. A covenant's too mushy.
Yeah. It is interesting too that speaking of breaking your hearts. That is in this section, this passage that we read. So what is the, I think I know what this is talking about and what this is saying, but in 33, where it says, I will put my law within them and I will write it on their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
What is that referring to? Because my thought is that this is kind of a statement of like, this is, it's not, the law is already written down. It's in the temple. You know, you can go and see it. But this is, no? Oh, there's no temple.
It was destroyed.
Yeah. But, like, it was, the law is written down. That's how
at one point it was on scrolls.
Yeah, that's what you think of. But I'm going, like, we're changing that. By writing it in your heart means that it's going to, you carry it with you wherever you go. And that's the point. It's not just like for their services, like they would have had, you know, contemplative time and service, relative service time, even without a temple.
Right.
So it's also like a statement of like, it's not just during that period of time where you come to the holy place, whatever that looks like or wherever that is. And then that's your time period with God. It goes with you. You cannot separate yourself from it. So,
yeah. Just to give you a sense of how important this word is, the word that's translated and accurately, heart, or hearts, it occurs 42 times.
Okay.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
In the among the Hebrew scriptures, and covenant occurs 47 times.
Hmm.
So those two walk hand in hand often.
Hmm.
Of the covenant with God, is not something that you remember on your anniversary. It's something that is daily, daily, deep within you. Mm-hmm. And the word that here is heart, is in Hebrew has all sorts of connotations, but they all point towards the innermost, most important part of a person that makes a person who that person is. So conscience and morality, and here's a good old classic phrase, the seat of appetites, but also the source of courage, all sorts of stuff like that. So it's the entire being of the person is part of this covenant.
Gotcha. The last verse is one that makes me giggle just a little bit, just because I'm imagining the dramatized version of it. No longer shall they teach one another or say to each other, know the Lord, for they shall all know me. So like, I'm just imagining like, you need to know God. And then the response is like, who do you think you're talking to? Why are you wasting my time? I know God.
Yeah. I didn't think you were going to be that rude about it.
What, you think you're going to learn me something about God? Right. Let me tell you.
We're all here. Mm-hmm. We all have the same blessing from God.
Yeah. So I guess the real question is, okay, when does this happen? This covenant.
When will it's
when are we gonna reach this covenant, Bruce? When is this going to be come to fruition?
We don't know. I mean, it's like Jesus saying so many times that he can't tell people when prophecies are going to be fulfilled. That's not up to us to know. And that's not a unique thought.
Mm.
That instead is part of the biblical story, tradition, and practice. Is prophecies are made to give people hope and to give a sense of what they should work towards and not settle for anything less than.
Mm.
But there's not a date certain on it.
Mm.
No matter how much, and humans all the time try to say, the world's going to end on this date.
Right.
Or this is going to happen there. Nope. Not up to us.
I'm just wondering when the time comes where I'm not going to have street corner preachers yelling at me from across the way. That's my selfish desire. Like, I want to know when this happens.
We could write a Twilight Zone episode about the street corner preacher who for eternity gets to be on a corner preaching, and the audience, and he's in heaven and the audience is in hell, but they're all together. He's having the time. The preacher's, I got this great audience here. And the audience's like, when will he stop?
Very good. Anything else about this this passage here from Jeremiah?
It's a part of, I think it was three promises of what the New Covenant experience was going to be.
Okay.
So it continues on. And interestingly to me, in terms of structure of the book of Jeremiah, it takes place almost in the middle of it, whereas Isaiah has these kinds of passages at the end of the book of Isaiah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, then let's move on to our psalm.
Yes.
Psalm this week is that we've chosen. We got a choice in psalms.
It was
A or B, yeah. Psalm 119, verses 9 through 16. How can young people keep their way pure? By guarding it according to your word. With my whole heart I seek you. Do not let me stray from your commandments. I treasure your word in my heart so that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I declare all the ordinances of your mouth. I delight in the way of your decrees as much as in all riches. I will meditate in your precepts and fix my eyes on your ways. I will delight in your statutes. I will not forget your word. What do we know about Psalm 19? Do we know anything?
We know a lot.
Oh, do tell then.
It's okay. Book of Psalms, each psalm is a chapter. So the 23rd Psalm is also chapter 23. Psalm 119 is the longest chapter anywhere in the Bible.
Oh.
It goes on and on and on.
And they're all written by David, right?
Yeah.
But
it's 100.
But
it's 176 verses long.
Wow.
So that's why we only have a portion of it for liturgical use today. And in monasteries and convents, the tradition is to regularly pray through the entire book of Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the particular religious order. Do they do it once a month? Do they do it once a week? There are all sorts of different ways, but one of the traditions within the Episcopal Church is once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Psalm 119 basically takes a whole week.
I was going to say, Psalm 119 makes them want to quit.
Yeah. But by breaking it up.
Yeah.
And it they're said during morning prayer and evening prayer and sometimes Compline and Noonday prayer. So you don't sit down and do a gazillion verses all at once. It's more than we do on Sundays, but it's not overwhelming. And Psalm 119 was made to be long.
Mm.
You know, sometimes we get into long chapters in the Bible, and it's like, oh, that's because this was added in, and then that was added in, and they kind of squished these together, and then when they were making the chapters and verses, all this got stuck together, and no one knew what they were doing. Psalm 119, again, it's a book of Psalms, is a hymnal. Psalm 119 looks like it was composed pretty much in one series of sessions, mm-hmm. recording sessions or whatever, because it does have a pattern of verses and using synonyms for the term law.
Okay. Yep.
And 8 different ones that are used in a certain pattern. And again, it's one of these things that if we were fluent in Hebrew, we'd be like, oh man, this flows beautifully.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder to translate that into English.
Yeah, you can see some of those when you read this passage. We have, maybe we count, okay, so we start with, maybe we count the word.
Yeah.
Then commandments.
Yeah.
We use the word again. Statutes, ordinances, decrees, precepts, and then statutes again. Just in mm-hmm. this one section.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was going to be one of my questions, though, was whether or not there is a difference. Because, you know, technically a precept is a different thing than a law or a commandment. Because it's a, in English at least,
right.
That word is a general rule.
Mm-hmm.
So not like it's not really a thou shalt. It is like, hey, be good, man. You know, it's like... It's like the California hippies, you know, guidelines. Like, just be a good person, man.
To think how the dude would say it.
Being a good dude brings the room together, man.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's not bad.
But yeah. So yeah, you do kind of see a lot of those things. It does, this passage does start off, like as I started reading it, I thought this was going to be like, oh, this is very much an old man complaint thing.
Yeah.
Like, how can young people keep their ways pure? I don't know, Grandpa, how, you know what I mean? Like, but so yeah, why the focus on the young people? Like,
well, because part of it is the Psalm 119 addresses various age groups.
Oh, okay.
But there is...
So everybody gets their own time.
Little section.
Yeah.
But the what we now call formation of the young people is seen to be crucial for the good of the whole community as well as those young people.
Mm, gotcha.
And it is kind of the eternal question of... Okay, how can we keep those kids down the farm after they've seen Paris. Well, by teaching them the Torah, which particularly in the more traditional corners of Judaism is definitely lived out still, of having young men focus on the Torah for hours and hours a day. Because that way it will keep them out of trouble.
That would drive me to trouble.
Yeah, they don't talk about the people who flunk out of that course.
You know who doesn't have to read the Torah for hours a day? People who escape. Go to a different town. I'm gonna become a designer and go to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting though is verse 9, the grumpy old
man one.
Yeah, the old man one, is the only verse out of this selection that doesn't have I statements though. Like everything else, like that sentence is focused on this group of other people. And then 10 through 16 is, with my whole heart, I seek you. Do not let me stray from your commandments. True. I treasure your word. So it kind of makes me wonder if the author, I don't know. And maybe you said that each, like, different groups get their section in this very, very long psalm. So I wonder if there's a continued use of I statements throughout, or if that is an indication that this section, he is a part of that group, he or she is a part of that group.
It's supposed to be part of that group.
So whoever wrote this was a part of young people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yes, or at least wanted to take on the role or the character of a young person.
Gotcha. Gotcha, gotcha. Okay.
And for those of you keeping score, the term for young man, this is used 41 times in the Hebrew Scriptures.
Okay.
So there's a strong concern for the formation of the young people.
So wait. You said young man. Is that?
That's the literal translation.
Okay. So how can young men keep their way pure? Is really more the sentence.
Again, I'm having kind of a archaic Hebrew translation here, where it says it's a lad.
Yeah, that does change.
but not a lad of status. It's instead a servant.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My mind immediately starts to reread this in like a heavy Scottish accent.
Sure, why not?
How can those poor young lads keep their way pure? Guard it according to your word. Love it.
I need the subtitles like when I watch the BBC.
Yeah, there you go. Good deal. Anything else about this passage?
There was something that... Oh, just to emphasize that we translate the term commandments so poorly. Because it's, this is a relatively archaic Hebrew reference book that I'm using at the moment. But it's where it says commandment, translated as commandment, could also be translated as code of wisdom. And that's what Psalm 119 is about, is the teachings that God has to share with the human race.
Right.
Rather than the human race saying, okay, all we got to do is obey laws 1 through 10 and
right,
we're good to go.
Yeah. And I think we do ourselves a strong disservice, than with the way that we translate it, because it does. We do land on laws, commandments, these words that are like, feel as though there's like this judicial structure that we have to adhere to. And that's not really...
Psalm 119 is the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's not really what we're...
It's much more mystical.
Right.
That if you meditate on what we have learned from God, then you become much holier.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than if you read the commandments, you'll become a righteous dude.
Right. And those and that problem is not unique, obviously, to modern individuals,
right?
through translative issues. Like, by the time Jesus comes around,
yeah,
that's a problem.
That's part of what he's fighting. Yeah.
Yeah. Humans made a crap ton of laws based on, like, well, I mean, if you want to take the spirit of this God commandment that we talk about, which really probably the best word out of all the bunch that were translated would be then precepts, because that's a general rule.
Yeah, I was going to say Torah, but yeah, precepts for an average English speaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Taking all of God's precepts, mm-hmm, and creating, like, well, if you want to accomplish this rule of being nice to other people, here are the 400 rules that you have to follow. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just us. I guess that's my point.
Yeah. And one of the things to keep in mind is, you know, it took hundreds of years for it to get so messed up that Jesus was needed. And a lot of things that, a lot of particularly religious practices that started as, here's a really meaningful way to celebrate God's love for us, became, if you don't celebrate in this way, you're rejecting God's love.
I think it's interesting that the way you chose to look at that and phrase it as though it, you know, it took hundreds of years until that would happen. And the way that I look at it is, it only took a couple hundred years for us to get so off track. God goes, how about I incarnate a version of myself among you to set you on the right path? What a very drastic. Yeah. You chose to see it like, oh, it took a long time. And I'm like, that's not, it took very little time until you needed, like, drastic options Zeta.
Yeah. And of course the same timing took place within Christianity.
Yeah.
That, you know, by 200 AD, Christianity was already very screwed up, and it was only getting worse.
Yeah. Luckily we fixed all that. Anyways, we're perfect now. Let's move on to the gospel reading.
There is a wonderful article in the Los Angeles Times today about a Mennonite who became a drug lord. Yeah, in Mexico. Mennonites moved there so they could live pure lives of pacifism. Because where they were in the United States during World War I, they were highly suspicious because they wouldn't serve in the military and spoke a form of German and Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
They moved to Mexico so they could live their lives of pacifism and generosity to their neighbor. And it all was destroyed by current generation who started to work in league with Colombian drug lords to refuel their planes and sell their product and everything else. He's now in jail for life.
Wow.
And the community broke up.
Yeah.
And they've moved around the world because they're so traumatized by the murders and stuff.
Okay, so the gospel reading.
that's the Mennonites. I mean, if that can happen to Mennonites, it can certainly happen to any Christian.
I mean, I agree. The Mennonites generally are a better people than I have come to find out. Well, when the basic thing is
pacifism. And,
yeah, yeah.
And 100%. Literally the guy starts turning around an M16. It's like, yeah, I think we have an issue.
Yikes. John chapter 12, verse 20 through 33. Now among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip went and told Andrew. Then Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." The crowd standing there heard it and said that it was thunder. Others said, "An angel has spoken to him." Jesus answered, "This voice has come for your sake, not for mine. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." He said this to indicate the kind of death he was to die. A little fun, little the John additive of like, just a case.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I love it. I love it. They're at the festival.
Jerusalem, Passover.
Passover, gotcha. Okay. And there were some Greek people there. There were lots of different kind of people there. Mm-hmm.
There's a party.
Yeah, I find this, the way that this is, they don't just like, John doesn't just say like, some Greeks approached Jesus and asked this question. We have like this bouncer story of like the Greeks coming to Philip and we're like, hey, like, we want to see Jesus. And we're like, who's asking?
You dress like this to get in?
Sir, we are Greek. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to talk to Andrew and we'll see what he says. And Andrew somehow gets, you know, he gets slipped a drachma and decides to let him get come in and talk to Jesus, right? So what is I think it's weird. What a weird way to start the conversation. Like, these people want to see Jesus and they get there through the game of telephone that they have to play. And Jesus starts with, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified," which almost in my head sounds like, "Oh, how awesome it is for you to see me."
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it's the last shot for anyone who's not either a Roman or Roman authority or a disciple.
Oh, my point was, it sounds almost a little self-absorbed. Like,
okay,
how great. You're in luck. You're in luck, buddy. This is going to be the best day of your life. The hour has come for me to be glorified. In your presence, aren't you lucky?
It's going to be gory. Yeah, John is so bizarre compared to the other three Gospels, where this is all taking place just before the Last Supper.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, in the other Gospels, there's all sorts of fraldarole going on around the temple.
Oh, what a good word, fraldarole.
I love it. And John just throws up. It's like he has a pot of spaghetti and says, okay, I'll serve out this much. Wait, that's not enough. I'm going to pile some more on. Oh, wait, no, that's not enough to feed everyone. Here we go. And it's beginning to overflow the plate.
Yeah. I'm going
to put the sauce on. That's what John does in the verses before they go to the upper room.
Gotcha.
He's like, oh, the Greeks. Got to have the Greeks in there. Scholars think
the Greeks are the Parmesan on top.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more. Can't have too much Greek.
Yeah. Would have been feta, maybe. But
there you go.
Delicious.
I mean, I'm playing both sides of the fence with this. Like, I make the joke because it's funny. But I suppose the context clues are kind of there as to, like, what's going on, or at least in my mind. By taking the extra step of talking about this, you know, what I called a bouncer incident, kind of reading between the lines tells me that, like, they were safeguarding Jesus, right? So, like,
probably
there's this level of, like, I don't know if you get to see him. Like, you know, the boss is real busy right now. You know, like, so kind of that. And which seems to indicate that this what I said was self-absorbed. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified is probably more directed towards his disciples. And is really more of a statement of, like, we're not holding back at this point. Stop people from, you know, stop trying to gatekeep. Stop trying to, like, now's the time. Like, we're going to, this is for all people. This is not a reserved, this is not an invitation only thing anymore. This is, like, we're opening up the door. Stop trying to play favorites or, like, restrict access or anything.
And much faster than happens in the other Gospels and or the Book of Acts, it's pointing to people beyond Judaism.
Yeah.
These are Greeks. And so a lot of scholars say this is the go out and preach to all nations verses. And at the end of this encounter, again, very different from the other Gospels, it says, after Jesus had said this, he departed and hid from them.
Huh.
And them being a crowd.
Yeah.
The crowd that was around him.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to admit, this is another passage I find it more in the Gospel of John, I think, overall. But this is another passage to me that as I sit and ponder it, I have trouble determining, or I think this is more, oftentimes more, a passage that I think Jesus is saying to himself.
Oh, okay.
Around, even though, like,
it kind of implies that.
Because I, like, Jesus to me is, as far as, and again, I think it's in the gospel, more in the Gospel of John than others, shows this a level of self-awareness.
Yeah.
And sometimes I, like, it creates this caricature of Jesus that I think sometimes gets lost in maybe his surroundings, and not, like, quite, you know, not always like, hey, I'm saying this because this is pertinent to you.
Mm-hmm.
This is more like he strikes me as kind of like a free flowing thought kind of a guy, where sometimes it's just like he's thinking out loud. Because if you think of that, like, in those terms, and then reread these passages, you can kind of, like, it kind of makes sense of, like, he might be talking to himself.
Well, yeah, you look at verse 27. Now my soul is troubled. What should I say?
Dot, 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 dot. Yeah, should I say this? Because I kind of think it. But no, that doesn't make it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This is a lot of this strikes me as potential internal dialogue that he's saying out loud.
And seems totally irrelevant to the Greeks.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you're sitting here saying, like, okay, all right, well, then, yes, what is this instruction that he's giving to the Greeks? Or if the Greeks were just the messenger for the opportunity to talk to his disciples, which makes a little bit more sense, like a little bit more of this kind of applies. But then you kind of run into trouble with some of the lines of, like, for those who love their life, lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there my servant will be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor. But in context of everything else, talking about, like, hey, the grain actually has to die in order for it to be fruitful. Like, is that really the message he's telling his disciples? Like, you're not really worth what you're not doing what you're supposed to do unless you die. Like, well, that's not really the call that he gives them. He gives them the call of going forth and spreading the message, not like the die thing is his thing.
Right.
So like, I don't know. Like the more I read this, the more it's kind of like he starts with like, I'm going to address you. That reminds me of this thing that I have to do. Yeah. The hour has come for the man, the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain falls into the earth and dies, it just remains a single grain. But it has to die in order to be fruitful. And, you know, because if I love my life so much, you know what I mean? Yeah, like you can kind of read it that way.
Well, and it becomes and it expands to a dialogue.
Yeah.
With God.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I find very interesting about this passage. Then a voice came from heaven. I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. Which is kind of like he says, the voice has come for your sake, not for mine. But in the verse prior to that, the crowd standing there heard it and said that it was thunder. So if what Jesus says is true, like, oh no, the voice has come for your sake, not for mine, then how come they didn't hear it clearly?
Yeah, that is one of the ongoing themes in the Gospel of John.
Mm.
Again, last gospel written, people are beginning to get off track.
Mm-hmm.
That if you guys heard God's own voice saying it, you'd say, it was thunder. And yeah, so that's literally part of the closing of Jesus's public ministry. Since from here, he'll go into seclusion, including the Last Supper, and then arrest and death.
Yeah.
So the last thing said in public is the, this voice came for your sake and not mine, and you didn't get it.
I also kind of, I don't know. If, and just,
yeah.
Jesus, don't forget, Jesus is human. So it's okay for me to think that every once in a while, he doesn't have to be perfect.
Right.
He doesn't have to be perfect. So that's where I approach this.
Okay.
I do, at least right now, where I am in my life, I read this and I say that this might be spoken out loud, internal dialogue to the very end of verse 28, which is like, verse 27. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it is for this reason I have come to this hour. And then I feel like maybe he realizes like people, did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
Father, glorify your name. That's like the result of his ponderance.
Yeah.
And then a voice comes from heaven. I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe Jesus was wrong. Like, that sure sounds to me like God coming down and going, don't worry, buddy. I got you.
Yeah. Well, but why does that make – in what way is Jesus wrong?
This voice came for your sake, not for mine.
Oh, it was that. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little for you. I mean, come on. You don't feel some level of comfort from the voice of God coming down and saying...
Well, and there's some scholars that say that verse 30, Jesus answered, this voice has come for your sake and not for mine, that was inserted by a scribe.
Mm.
Because of the dynamic you described.
Okay. Well, and I suppose there's a way to interpret it where it's still right. Of like, it came for your sake, not for mine. But it did feel good. It did. Yep. It was comforting. Doesn't mean that it didn't help.
Right. It doesn't mean it didn't help. And again, as I've said before, the Gospel of John, you got to picture Jesus walking around 3 feet in the air.
Yeah.
That there's always a divine nature to him that's right in your face, unlike the first three Gospels.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot more of God being like the kind of like the hype man. You know what I mean? In things of like just quick interjections of like, yes.
I gotcha.
You got it. Yeah. He's right.
What he said.
Exactly what he said. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, that is John's, my interpretation of John's interpretation. anything else about the gospel reading?
It's worth looking at the other gospels, whether you do it the cheating way that I do of using a online gospel parallel, or do it by flipping pages in a Bible. It's worth looking at the last public teachings of Jesus in each of the four gospels, because it will give you the heart of each of those gospels. What is the topic sentence for that gospel?
Very good. With that, we will come to a close on
we will.
This, your podcast, for whatever date, March 17th.
A voice came from heaven.
It's the 17th. 17th. Go to bed. We lost an hour today. I know you're feeling it. Go to bed. Go take a nap. This your podcast for March 17th, 2024, the fifth Sunday in Lent. As always, we encourage you to join us in worship, however that works for you, your situation, your family, your roommates. Come in person.
Your pets.
Yeah, right.
If your cat is sick, you can worship from home.
Yeah. There are special dispensations for you. No, there are no special dispensations because dispensations are not needed.
Right.
Join us in worship either in person at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. There's the 9 o'clock hour in between. As we mentioned, there will be some a little bit more of special programming this coming Sunday, but that is still going on. And youth and youngsters educational
classes.
Offerings continue uninterrupted. We're not boring them with the survey. and if you're not able to join us in person, our 10 o'clock service is broadcast on our YouTube channel, HFEC Videos. And until next week, I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.